The following is a production of Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary. For more information about the seminary, how you can support it, or applying to become a student, please visit www.gpts.edu. Hello and welcome to another edition of Confessing Our Hope, the podcast of Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary. My name is Zach Groff and I'll be your host today, and we are launching our summer series where we debrief about different assembly and synod reports that from different national level gatherings of branches of Christ's church that generally meet over the summer. Today we'll be taking a look at the 213th stated meeting of the General Synod of the Associate Reformed Presbyterian Church, that is the ARP, and that was held on June 6th through 8th at Bunclarken Retreat Center, which is the ARP's retreat center in Flat Rock, North Carolina. To help us debrief about General Synod, I have invited the Reverend Jeff Kingswood to call in and join us on the podcast. Jeff is not only an ARP minister, he's ministering at Grace ARP in Woodstock, Ontario, and he's been an ARP minister since 2001, originally ordained in 1988, but he's also the chairman of the board for Greenville Seminary, and he is a board member with the Banner of Truth Trust and an instructor in New Testament logic and oral communication at the Gillespie Academy, which is a ministry of Grace ARP there in Woodstock. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Zach.
So, Jeff, you know, just some basic questions. I've laid out the dates, I've laid out the place, but, you know, how many churches are in the ARP today, and how many commissioners came to Synod that you know of?
There are somewhere between 260 and 270 congregations and mission works in the denomination at the moment. I'm not sure the totals. I looked at last year's reports, and this year's will be slightly different, but somewhere in that neighborhood, 275. And there were over 400 delegates to the Synod, and that would probably be broken down into somewhere in the neighborhood of a 60-40 minister-elder ratio. It's always hard for elders to take that time off. It's a week off work for a lot of them. And so the elders tend to be underrepresented somewhat, but not too badly.
60-40 sounds like a pretty good split to my PCA ears. so that,
yes,
that's admirable. I commend those men for making the sacrifice to go. Now, when you all meet, I know the ARP has, is it just fraternal? It might be more than fraternal relationships with the Presbyterian Church there in Pakistan and other international branches of the ARP. Are they represented as well, or do they come as fraternal delegates usually?
They come as fraternal delegates. There are two daughter synods that were birthed out of ARP missionary work in the earlier part of the 20th century and covering really the 20th century. And those two synods are Mexico and Pakistan. And they are now separate, independent synods. They stand on their own. But we do continue to have relationships with them. And they, if they are represented at synod, it's a fraternal relationship.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So I visited the synod, you know, because we saw each other. We were able to speak for a bit there in the main house at Bunclarken. But
right.
I visited for just a morning, the Wednesday morning of the synod, and it was pretty clear to me that there's something different about the ARP and about the ARP's way of going about conducting business. But for the benefit of our listeners, can you share, as a seasoned churchman, what you view as some of the distinctives about the ARP's way of conducting their business at synod and interacting with each other when they gather together as a national church?
Yeah, for the most part, I think our synod meetings are characterized by a real Christian fellowship. It was striking to me when I came into the ARP that every sederunt, every session of the synod, so that's morning, afternoon, and evening, is begun with preaching from the Word, and not just a short devotional, but a sermon. And this year we had testimonies appended to those. So we spend between 40 to 50 minutes at the beginning of each session in worship. And there's a warmth to the meetings. There's a frequent pausing for prayer, prayers of thanksgiving and prayers of intercession. The moderator often calls different men from the floor to pray for a situation, or if we're in a particularly thorny discussion, that someone is asked just to lead us in prayer. And as I said, for the most part, there's a very warm spirit in our synod, and it's characterized by a fellowship in Christ that, even though we may disagree about some issues and disagree vehemently at times, we're still brothers in Christ. And I don't know if that's 200 years of experience, of trial and tribulation that sanctifies a denomination that way, or whether it's the southernly gentlemanliness. But it goes deeper than that. There's definitely a collegial and Christian spirit there. It's a pleasure to be part of.
I had picked up on that as well. It felt like a big family reunion in a lot of ways. And even Bun Clarkin as a retreat center has that feel, since there's so many little homes right there on the retreat center campus. So it was a very pleasant, I mean, it was a beautiful day when I visited as well, but it was a very pleasant experience for me as an outsider to come in and to observe and share a meal with the brothers together, and to see the really warm, affectionate bonds of fraternal brotherhood and fellowship that you're describing. Now, you said that every session, every sederunt, began with a sermon and with testimony as well. Is that typical practice at the ARP's synod, or is that something that moderator Lee Shalnut put together himself and organized for this year?
No, that's typical. That's been the practice. The testimonies were something new that moderator Shalnut had added. He asked several men to bring testimonies of how the Lord had worked in just through the ordinary means in missions, in building up local congregations, in outreach efforts, just giving a different aspect of the Lord's work in across our denomination. So that was different. But as long as I have been part of the ARP, the worship has been part of the opening of each session, and that includes the singing of hymns and psalms and prayer, and then a serious sermon, which really sets the tone for the meetings. It reminds us of whose work we're doing and the way in which it ought to be done.
Mm-hmm. Amen. I was going to say, it's a good reminder of why you're there. You're not just there to go through the reports and to deal with court cases like an organization would, but you're there to serve the head of the church, Jesus Christ, and to proclaim his gospel. And I was keenly reminded of that while sitting there behind the commissioner's line, right? I was in the peanut gallery, so to speak.
That's right.
And just as a side note, Jeff, and for the benefit of our listeners, I'm not one who really has opportunity to sing psalms a cappella in a large group all that often. We do it at family worship frequently. We'll do either a psalm or a hymn in family worship. But to be in a body of hundreds of people, mostly men, but men and women, singing, you know, Psalm 23b, and that was beautiful, and I won't soon forget it. In fact, you know, I'm hoping that next year I'll be able to spend more time at the ARP Synod and to worship with you all even more. Now, moving into the actual business of the Synod, for our listeners, if you go to the ARP website and you just Google Associate Reformed Presbyterian Church General Synod or something like that, You can actually get access to everything that the delegates had, almost everything that the delegates had in front of them in paper form, as they were processing through reports and things. And so we don't need to go into, you know, granular detail now, but can you give us the 30,000-foot view of a play-by-play over those 3 days when you were meeting in terms of the business that the Synod tended to and you know, the order in which you tended to it, or just, you know, you don't have to do it in chronological order, Jeff.
Right.
And it's been a couple weeks, so just whatever comes to mind, can you give us maybe the highlights of the Synod's business?
Day one begins with a worship service. That is the beginning of the Synod. 2 o'clock on the Tuesday afternoon, we gather, we have worship. Part of that worship recognizes ministers and elders who have died in the year past, and also a communion service. And that's a high point in the work of the Synod, is that worship service. And then we get to the business. So Tuesday evening after supper, we get to our moderators' committees and do committee work and look at the memorials and recommendations from the various committees. And then Wednesday morning, we get down to business. And following a time of worship and we begin each morning with a psalm sing on the porch of the dining hall. And that's an a cappella psalm sing that's held every morning. But then after the worship service, we get down to business and we hear from our fraternal delegates. Those were spaced out. We used to do those in a group in one session, but they were spaced out throughout the synod this year, which I thought was helpful. They didn't sort of just dissolve into an amorphous report, but they were distinctive. And we heard from a number of our ecumenical partners, and it was encouraging to hear the work the Lord is doing in the EPCEW in England and Wales, and the Free Church of Scotland. And I think the highlight of our ecumenical relations really was the invitation brought to us by Bruce Beckinsale, a former moderator of the RPCNA, to attend in 2019 a concurrent synod with them at Geneva College in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. A couple of years ago, the RPCNA came down to Bon Clarkin, and we had a concurrent synod, and they've now returned the invitation, and it was received without dissent. It was a unanimous acceptance of that invitation. And that's a little bit out of our comfort zone. We're a southern denomination by and large, and to move up north of the Mason-Dixon line for a synod meeting, I think some of us were wondering if it would come off, but it was accepted, as I said, unanimously. So that was definitely a highlight. And then just the regular meetings that are the bread and butter of all meetings like this. There's a certain sameness to every kind of synodical or general assembly proceeding, but that was a highlight, the ecumenical delegates and the invitation from the RPCNA.
And not only will that move up to Geneva College for next year make it easier for you and our other Canadian brothers to attend Synod, but also it will free up Bon Clarkin to maybe be used by another denomination for their General Assembly next year, am I right?
Yeah, in 2019, not next year, but 2019. Oh, yeah. That is a possibility, and I don't want to steal anyone's thunder, but that there is a denomination considering that possibility. So that would be a good opportunity for us to show hospitality in that way as well.
Now, if from what I understand, you had some matters, specific matters, before you all that carried over from last year. Are you able to tell us about them and elaborate on any resolution to any issues that were longstanding or outstanding or any changes in the news? I know some things. I won't name them. I'll just let you take the question from there.
Yeah, there were three or four. One of the things that's ongoing is a committee to revise our and clean up our Book of Discipline. The Book of Discipline's been amended and changed over the years, and that process hasn't always been with a careful eye to continuity. And so there are some problems in our Book of Discipline. And so a committee was struck a couple of years ago to revise that Book of Discipline. They came back with a draft document for us to look at, to bring recommendations back to them for final amendments. And then hopefully next synod we'll have a completed and revised Book of Discipline that will be much more cohesive and in line with our other constitutional documents. So we're looking forward to that. Another item that was brought back to this synod was a request by our Canadian presbytery to the synod to look at the question of membership vows. We changed our form of government a couple of years ago, and the membership vows were altered slightly. And one of the alterations was that we went from a subscriptionist membership to a more broad and vague affirmation of, you know, this is what we believe as ARPs. And the Canadian Presbytery was asking for some clarification and, if possible, a return to the former, what was called Vow 5, which actually asked new members to subscribe to what they understood within the Westminster Confessions. There was a clause there that allowed people to affirm it insofar as they understood it, understanding that our members aren't going to be theologians and they're not going to have an exhaustive knowledge the way an elder or a minister would be required to in their subscription. But definitely a membership vow that differs from most denominations. That was referred to our Theological and Social Concerns Committee, and it was brought back with a report that was highly unsatisfactory. It contained errors of theology, history, and jurisprudence, and it was referred back for study and revision unanimously. And there was no discussion on the subject. There was an immediate motion to refer back, and that went back. So we're thankful for that. There was a discipline case that's been ongoing, and hopefully that's been resolved now. That was dealt with by our Judicial Affairs Commission, and I hope in a satisfactory way. Then also, there have been some attempts over the years. It's been ongoing for a decade or so now. Dealing with our relationship with Erskine College and Seminary, it even got to the point of lawsuits at one point where the synod was seeking to establish the fact that it was the parent organization, if you like, that the college and seminary, although they have an independent structure legally, that they're born out of our denomination, and the trustees are appointed by our denomination, and so they have a duty of care toward the denomination and a responsibility to accurately reflect the theological positions of the denomination, and that hadn't been happening. And so there have been some struggles, some presidents hired and removed, and came to a surprising head at this synod, surprising for many of us, when our new synod president, Dr. Rob Gustafsson, led a panel on the platform before the synod and stood up and acknowledged that errors had been made in the past by the college and the seminary and by the denomination, but taking responsibility for that and affirming that the new leadership, both at the college and at the seminary, and his leadership overall, were committed to working with the synod, to representing the synod's understanding of what it is to be an evangelical Christian university. And many of us were extremely encouraged, surprised and encouraged by this action. It hadn't been called for. It was an action initiated by them, and it was received with a thunderous round of applause at the end of their time on the platform. The president and the dean of both the college and the seminary spoke to the issue, and there were some very positive statements made and affirmations made. We've had a relationship with the United States military, training chaplains, which involved us in working with Muslim and Buddhist, for instance, chaplains, which the Synod ordered the seminary to cease and desist. They did that, and despite not renewing the contract officially, the enrollment of chaplains in our DMIN program has skyrocketed. So we're encouraged by that. So there are a lot of positive things there, and I think that probably for most of us was a highlight, if not the highlight, of the Synod. It's an issue that, as I said, has been looming for a decade and becoming quite hot at some points. But there was a definite spirit of reconciliation there, and we're very thankful for that.
That's amazingly encouraging to hear, and I had read a little bit about this. I wasn't present when the Erskine officials took the stage and took the microphone and publicly, on behalf of the institutions, repented. I mean, that's really the word that came to mind as I was reading the account of it, and I think I was reading one delegate who was there recounted the words of the provost from Erskine Seminary, Provost Leslie Holmes, saying something along the lines of, if you're not reformed in your theological perspective, if you're not an inerrantist in your understanding of the Bible, and if you're not pro-ARP church, then you are not on the faculty of Erskine Seminary. I mean, to read those words with regards to Erskine is deeply encouraging. And, you know, I'm excited to see the direction of the school here on out.
Absolutely. Les Holmes' statement, Dr. Holmes' statement, was earth-shaking. And we're very excited to hear that. We were very excited and continue to be. And would ask your hearers to pray with us for the men who are working to that end and to see that reformation. It's just another sign. The ARP has been moving in a more confessional, more subscriptionist, reformed perspective over the years, and that movement continues. We're thankful for that and excited at what the Lord is doing amongst us.
From what I could tell, and this was really highlighted for me when the seminarians stood up and were introduced, or I should say when the men who are under care of the ARP, of the various presbyteries in the ARP, stood up and were introduced, including our own Martin Dendecker, who is who's one of our students here and also our on-site IT coordinator. And right now I think he's in Canada for the summer, but we're looking forward to seeing him again in the fall.
Right.
But this shift in the ARP, this pivot, we might say, toward a more confessional practice, faith and practice, Presbyterian faith and practice, I should say, has been driven in large part by where ministers are coming from into the ARP.
Absolutely.
For you know, both by transfer and also right out of seminary. And it brings to mind a quote that I've been highlighting of Dr. Piper's. This is from an old article Dr. Piper wrote called The Theological Seminary. But he wrote, "I am involved in theological education at the seminary level because I believe that to a large degree the future of the Reformed seminary is the future of the Reformed church. If we are to see a blessing from God, there are certain things that we ought to be doing," and in the seminary, he means. And so it is very important that we think deeply about the mission of the seminary and also the practice of the seminary. And, you know, things that are going on at the schools that serve the ARP, Greenville's is one of them, though certainly not the largest, I think are really shaping the denomination in a way that, you know, 30, 35 years ago would have been completely unpredicted or even unheard of.
Yes, absolutely. I think the shift began 40 or so years ago when there were some men who came out of RTS Jackson, who graduated there, who studied under Dr. Morton Smith and others on the faculty there at the time. And they really began this. They took the stand on the women's issue. They began this work of reformation in the denomination and really took a stand. And now we're seeing that kind of leadership from men who are graduates of Erskine, but also RTS and predominantly RTS Charlotte, and also some Greenville men and some Westminster men. But definitely we're seeing the fruit of men who've studied under solid reformed educators who have shaped our denomination and who are standing up and being counted as churchmen, which is a really exciting thing to see.
It is. It is. And we will continue to pray for the ARP. I have them on my list of denominations and ministries that I pray for on a rotating basis. And I smile when I pray for the ARP because I know that good things are happening. And I trust that the Lord will continue to bring reformation and revival to her. And it's just very interesting to see that beeline from the seminary to the denomination, where what men are learning in the classroom, the equipment they're getting in the classroom, the tools they're being given there are going to use in the courts of the church and in the congregations of the church, and shaping the direction of at least this small denomination. And, you know, we could pray the same for other denominations, larger or smaller as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jeff, did you have any concluding remarks or observations you wanted to make before we close up? I think you've given us a pretty good overview, but I want to give you the last word as far as what happened at Synod.
I am thankful for the way Synod is conducted. I'm thankful for the way that this past Synod went. Our moderator, Lee Shelnut, is a solid confessional man, and has led in a number of ways in encouraging directions. He's a pastor of a church, but he's also very involved in missions and again our work among in different fields in a post-Christian Europe, in Pakistan and some other areas was highlighted and affirmed, and that's always good to see. We've had a Christian hospital and a Christian school system in Pakistan since the early 1900s, and that continues to work there and continues to be a witness for Christ in that community. We're thankful for that. Thankful for opportunities, more and more opportunities across Europe as there's immigrant and refugee populations that are in many ways just open to be reached. And we hear a lot of unrest, we hear a lot of discouragement and a lot of terror questions, but there are also opportunities for the gospel. And Lee and the Board of World Witness really highlighted the opportunities that some of our mission staff in Europe are having in those communities, and we're very thankful for that. So that was encouraging. I am very thankful that for a small denomination, the ARP has been punching above its weight in Islamic missions for a long time. And so very encouraged to see that continue as well.
And next year, you all are meeting at Bunclarken again.
That's great.
Because the Joint Synod will be the following year in 2019. So you'll be meeting at Bunclarken. Do you have the dates for that in front of you, Jeff, or no?
Oh, I'm not sure that I do. It's the first week of June. It's always the first week of June.
And the moderator is going to be ruling elder Philip Malfrus, who is from Devinger Road ARP here in Greenville. Am I right?
That's correct. And it was touching to see that he was nominated by his son, who is a pastor in the ARP, and the former vice moderator of our denomination. So you don't often get to see a son nominating his father to be the moderator of a denomination, and and there were a lot of wet eyes at Synod when that happened. That was a delight to see, and I'm looking forward to Mr. Malfrus's leadership. He has the reputation of being a godly and gracious churchman.
Well, that's good to hear. and I got to meet Patrick, his son, there at Bun Clark. And it's funny, you have to go, you know, an hour away to meet someone who lives 15 minutes down the road from you.
Yes.
But, you know, it was good to meet him, as well as many other of the brothers there at Synod. So, Jeff, again, thank you for joining us. Thank you for taking some time to debrief about Synod. I hope that this is encouraging to hear for those of you who are listening to the podcast. I know it's encouraging to me. It was a blessing to be there for a morning. And please continue to pray for the ARP. You know, I'm going to say this at the end of all of our debriefing sessions, an exhortation to pray for the courts of the church, where really the business of the church is conducted, but also where God-honoring, hopefully God-honoring worship is going forth.
Amen.
Thank you, Jeff. And
thank
brother,
you,
have a great day. You've been listening to a production of Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary. For more information about the seminary, please visit www.gpts.edu.